When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewell, and him, Robbie Earle. Robbie, how are you? We've had a chance now to decompress from all of the craziness of the last 3 months. Are you just loving life, or are you still busy? What's going on?
Oh, man. You know what? Busy, but not breathlessly so for a moment, which is nice. I was telling Candace, I think what's crazy is looking back at the entire life of this podcast, we've actually never had a situation where we were covering something for 9 consecutive weeks. Because WandaVision was 9 episodes, but remember it was a joint premiere with
true,
one and two.
True. So 8 weeks.
So I was getting to the end of that and I was like, man, I, on the one hand, as people know, really, really enjoyed She-Hulk. So there was no part of it where I felt like the show itself was dragging. Mm. But towards the end, I was like, this is a marathon, man. Like we have been like between that and then Werewolf by Night dropping in the middle of it and Comic-Con. I mean, it's the best sort of marathon. And plus, I mean, I clearly don't have a problem with marathons anyway.
Inside but, jokes. Love to be a part of one someday.
I'd love to be a part of one someday. So yeah, no, things are great on my end. And honestly, we talked about this a little bit offline, but I also just love that you're back home and sort of back to some kind of normalcy for the first time in a while. Because I'm
back
all over the place, but I'm used to you being my rock there in Nashville.
The boys are back in town. The
world
boys
traveler.
Are back in town. The boys are back. I'm back. It feels really good. My Vikings are 5-1, and I'm bringing that up today because we're talking with Matthew Berry, the fantasy football king today. So, you know, if there ever was a time for me to bring it up, it's going to be now. No, it's a little bit of a strange feeling, isn't it, to not have Marvel content right now and then looking at the calendar and being like, wow, we've been so consumed with Disney Plus shows for most of the year. We have a special left and we have a film left, a massive film. But that's it, really. I think until February, I was looking up the shows and a lot of them say like early 2023 or spring 2023.
Right.
But if it doesn't start right away in January, we may not have another show until, who knows, March. Again, some of them just say early, so we'll see what that means.
Right. Although, you know, it's crazy because even still, I feel like there's been a decent amount of news dropping.
True.
And you know, some of that is, I guess we're kind of getting used to a trickle of that at any given point. But I think for me, we brought this up a tad on our finale of She-Hulk episode, but I like it, I think, just as a fan. Like, I like that if only for a couple weeks, we have to sort of sit and anticipate something. You know, I think that that's so much of the, like, I remember the way I felt when a new, like, phase three project would release, and it felt like, like I would walk out of the theater, and I was so excited, and I was also so bummed that I was going to have to wait another 3 months or whatever before another one came out.
Or WandaVision. Remember the first time? We waited forever, you know, for that.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That first time you hit play, wasn't that a wild experience? We had never had a show before, and we had no idea what to expect. It's in black and white. I just remember that being like, what the heck?
Right. Oh, man. Yeah.
So there is something fun about the buildup, no doubt.
There is. There is. And you know, I'm really curious to see. There are still a lot of projects planned and announced. Like we talked about in the last episode, some are already being pushed out. So I feel like it's the best of all worlds, and that we know that there's plenty of stuff coming. There's no sign that there's any sort of trouble with any of that. And it seems like they're really just kind of slowing things down because they can, which is something you and I have kind of been asking for a bit. Mm-hmm. So that feels like great news. And also, you know, I don't know if these are connected, probably not, but it does seem like, you know, as they're spacing some things out, it's allowing for some interesting updates, you know, like in the case of Blade, mm-hmm. and also like some interesting casting additions.
Yeah, true. Here we go.
One big one that was kind of being whispered about last week mm-hmm. and has now been officially confirmed.
This is wild. This is one of the more wild ones we've ever had.
It is.
Because it's also a recasting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, man, Incredible Hulk, the movie of recast. But yeah, so if you haven't seen this yet, Ross, General Ross or Secretary Ross, depending on the film, that was previously played by William Hurt, has been recast as Harrison Ford.
Let's go.
Wow. Okay. So that's a big in a couple ways. And then I want to, because you and I haven't talked about this, I want to hear your thoughts. But just off the bat, we just a couple episodes were talking about, I think it was after you watched Incredible Hulk in your rewatch, mm-hmm. about how, man, you know, we've got the Thunderbolts movie coming out. It's a bummer that we lost that character. Obviously, it's a bummer that we lost William Hurt as a person, mm-hmm. but also the character that he portrayed. And so, one, you know, obviously Marvel agreed because they're bringing that character back and moving him forward. Mm-hmm. But two, wow. Harrison Ford is such an interesting pick to me because, I mean, one, I love Harrison Ford. I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan, obviously mm-hmm. love Han Solo like everybody else. And there are a ton of other Harrison Ford movies that I've really enjoyed, including the most recent Blade Runner.
Plane.
Great Gary Oldman performance there also. But the interesting thing right now about Harrison Ford is that he's kind of become a little bit of a meme.
He's like a grouch.
For how like grumpy he's gotten about Star Wars.
Right.
And so I've seen a lot of people joking like, oh man, like Harrison Ford thought he was tired of getting Star Wars questions. Just wait until he's being asked what his favorite MCU movie is.
Okay, so a couple things here, because a few people on our Slack posted the same thing, that he hasn't talked very fondly about his time as Han Solo. And then that obviously translating to this being like, gosh, I hope he doesn't look back and be like, ah, that time when I played Ross was so stupid. I hope he doesn't do that either. But one,
to clarify real quick, is he talking about the original trilogy or specifically the sequel?
So I would love to get an expert on this, but my understanding from the research I've done is in general, I've never heard him be super fond of Star Wars. Like even when he makes jokes about the originals, it's always like, well, they paid me.
Right.
Which,
right.
Again, he could just be joking, but it's not like he's ever gone above and beyond that I've seen to the public to be like, that was a role of a lifetime. Now, let me say this.
Yeah.
I want to contrast that to something because he is very proud of Indiana Jones.
I've heard that as well.
And so I think that shows you that maybe he just didn't love the Star Wars machine for whatever reason, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate. But B, I don't think he just dislikes all his roles. So there's a chance that he will view his time on Marvel very, very fondly. Not to mention, I think Marvel runs things better than Star Wars did, is my understanding. So I think that combined with, it's not that he's grouchy about all his roles. There's a chance that it still doesn't end up in the negative Star Wars light. And then I should also add, Oscar Isaac has been very public about some of the stuff he didn't like with the new Star Wars things.
That's
and
true.
And he came over to Marvel, and as far as I know, he's filming a season two. So I think if he hated it, you had a chance to get out after one season, right? I would think.
Yeah.
Again, this is all conjecture, but so maybe there's something that Marvel does. Well, we know there is. We talk about it all the time. We talked about it last week. But maybe there are things that Marvel does to make this transition smoother for these other A-list blockbuster type actors.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And I also think that with someone like Harrison Ford, I Feige is famously a massive Star Wars fan and mm-hmm. has kind of dropped Star Wars Easter eggs and shout outs throughout really the entire MCU, going all the way back to like phase one and phase two, which means that he has to be a huge Harrison Ford fan. And so I'm sure that he's going to give him a lot of deference and is probably aware of the things that we're talking about. So I feel like in that decision, they're going to kind of really allow him to shape the direction of this character. You know, like, I don't think you bring in someone like Harrison Ford unless you have some high hopes for where that character can go. Whether that means, I'm not saying that means the character is going to stick around beyond these two movies, but it does make me think that they're going to want to do something pretty significant. Like, you know, Robert Redford was only in Winter Soldier and then briefly in Endgame, as we'll talk about here in a second. But the role he had in Winter Soldier was pretty crucial to the MCU. You know, like mm-hmm. they brought him in and he dismantled what had kind of been the core apparatus of
That's true.
The franchise.
That's true.
And so I feel like, you know, they would reserve someone with Ford's clout for a role kind of deserving of it, which is also exciting to me to just kind of go back to what we were talking about with tracing that character arc.
I think I'm most excited just about the fact that we're bringing another A-lister on. I always like to see that Marvel has that ability still to convince mm-hmm. these people. I know money talks as well, obviously, but I think the more the merrier as far as the actors in the community goes. You mm-hmm. got to kind of remember that when it first started, not all of these people were like slam dunk A-listers at the time. Like, we now know Chris Hemsworth as a huge blockbuster person and right. Chris Pratt as a blockbuster person. And
Even Chris Evans.
Exactly. A lot of them. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. was very much cemented as an A-lister, but had gone through troubles too. So it's not like he was right. like,
it's
anytime you bring in people like Oscar Isaac, they are jumping right. into a well-oiled machine already versus kicking it off. And I wonder if there's a difference there, right? Like, Harrison Ford had the weight of Star Wars from starting it from the beginning and being like one of the bigger names in that. And then while Star Wars was like the king of the universe at the time, right? Whereas mm-hmm. I think even you could argue maybe when they started the new trilogy that Star Wars maybe was like slightly notched above Marvel. But now I think it's totally shifted to where Marvel is king. And it's interesting to right. bring in an A-lister into already a machine that's rolling. You know, maybe that's different. Maybe he doesn't feel the need to have to carry over some baggage or something. I don't know. So I just like A-listers yeah. joining the community in general, because it shows me that Marvel still's got it. They still got it. They can do right. it. They can bring people in. And I just like actors of that caliber joining the movies I like to watch.
Well, and you know, I'm glad you brought up like Air Force One. There's a certain role that Harrison Ford has played historically outside of the kind of sci-fi context, which I think, you know, even Indiana Jones goes into, at least in the third act of each of those movies.
Yeah. Face melting.
So, right. One of the best scenes in any movie. But I kind of love that the two movies that he's going to appear in, and since we didn't say explicitly,
oh, true,
he is going to appear in the Thunderbolts film, but also he's being billed as a headliner, as a star of Captain America and New World Order. Mm-hmm. So the way that's currently being billed is Captain America: New World Order, starring Anthony Mackie and Harrison Ford, and that's probably partially why I go back to Winter Soldier, because man, I think that that's going to be a very different role for him to play. Like, I feel like they're going to let it stay pretty grounded.
It might be pretty, a little more Air Force One and Fugitive than Star Wars.
Yeah. Keep it like on the kind of espionage side. And I like that. I can see Ford being kind of the grizzled ex-military man. And I think he would like not having to go into anything like super kind of wacky and far out, or, you know, it's not like a, I don't foresee him having to like have a conversation with Thanos.
No. Although could be fun. Hey, I'm kidding.
Secret Wars.
Yeah.
I'm seeing, man, all kinds of Secret Wars rumors popping off as there's a lull as well.
So really that's all I wanted today to be. I wanted to check in with our audience, give people a few bits of news here, including that, but also what's going on with us. And then we're chatting with Matthew Berry, which is going to be an awesome conversation. So stick around for that. You're going to want to hear that. But on the Friends from Work side, I can't guarantee this yet, but we're really excited about the possibility of talking to a few prominent people from She-Hulk. So that could be really fun and might be a huge part of our reflections episode, which we like to do. We like to reflect on it, but then also bring in someone who helped create the show to get their side of things too. And some of the articles I've been reading from creators of that show have been really interesting. And so I can't wait to have a couple of conversations. I'm just going to wait I'll tease it right there, and that's where we'll leave it.
There you go.
But that should be really fun. So hopefully we'll come back with some reflections on She-Hulk in the next week or so, maybe next week's episode or maybe 2 weeks from now. We haven't decided yet.
Well, and on that point, if you're listening to this because you saw Matthew Berry's name, which very fair, and you didn't catch our She-Hulk coverage.
True.
One, we would recommend that you watch She-Hulk. We had a ton of fun watching it. Yep. If you've kind of gotten to the end and you just missed the boat, I know there are a lot of people like that. There's been a ton of TV to keep track of right now. I'm behind on some of those shows that I've been trying to follow weekly. So no judgment.
I recommended it today.
Oh,
I did
nice.
The very thing we talked about last week, which is like, I'm at lunch with a friend today. And I was like, dude, you probably need to see it. It's so self-aware. That's what I kept saying. Like, I can't spoil anything, but just you should watch it. And I think I sold it. So that's interesting.
And see, I'm so curious to hear how folks like that react, because part of me thinks that even if you dislike it, and it was, you know, it was a divisive finale. I think critically it was generally well received, but I know some people, especially like certain kinds of MCU fans that are super continuity diehards.
Yeah. Which there's a little bit of that in me too.
Oh, sure. For sure. Yeah. And that's why I specify that, because I don't think that there are other complaints about She-Hulk early on that we addressed that seemed kind of to come out of the troubling trend that we've seen of like review bombing things that are starring women or, you know, people that aren't white. And so that was an element early on. I do think that there are some legitimately fair criticisms of the finale. But my point in saying all that is, I think whether you're in the camp of loving it or hating it, it is worth seeing. Because I think it says a lot about where Marvel is right now, how they're viewing themselves. And I think in some ways, what we can expect kind of moving forward.
Yeah, I love that point. That's an interesting point you made a second ago too, because I think this is something I want to get to in our reflections episode. A couple listeners actually messaged us this idea. There are a few projects where separating what's a genuine criticism versus being lumped into quote unquote the man babies that just hate the show for different reasons.
Right.
Like,
right.
That can become more and more difficult in certain projects. You know, you and I have talked about that off air. And I think that's an interesting discussion to get into next time too, where that line is of like, yeah, you're allowed to have actual things you didn't like from the show. Like, I don't ever want to portray that we think everything is perfect and you're not allowed to disagree, you know,
but, oh, for sure.
But then those critiques being valid and very different from just like, well, you hate all women or you hate strong women or, you know, whatever, and being lumped into the same category. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
We'll get into that.
Yeah.
We'll get into that.
No, for sure. And yeah, I do think that'll make the Reflections episode especially interesting. I was also going to say, if you are watching, if you do go back and watch She-Hulk, or if you've already watched She-Hulk, we have an episode for every week. We also explored some of the comics over on the Patreon. We'll be exploring a few more of those on the Patreon here in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check that out. But specifically, we had a lot of fun with our finale episode. So I would recommend that you go back to last week's episode and check that out once you finish the series.
So two last things for me before Matthew Berry. One, I just want to tell our audience that we are in the midst of figuring out our Wakanda Forever screener already, which is wild. So we got invited. There are a few screeners going on. We got to figure out which ones we can go to. But I bring that up to say it's absolutely insane that there's a better than not chance we'll be seeing that movie literally next week. Next week.
Jeez. Yeah.
Which is just crazy. It felt like there was going to be a huge gap, but if you see it early, now it's like, here we go. We're already in Wakanda Forever world, and I am so stoked about the film. So I'm not going to get into a preview of that yet, but just know that the ball is rolling towards us seeing it next week and talking about it already. So
we're working on tracking down some folks to talk about Black Panther with.
Yeah, true.
So keep an ear out for that.
So that's exciting. And then lastly, before Matthew, my trivia. Quick rewatch update, Robbie. I watched Age of Ultron this week. That's where I'm at. I love it so much. I love it so much. This is where the preference side of things. I can't wait for people to see my preference list. It's getting really interesting.
I can't wait to see it.
My wife, Annika, loves Age of Ultron. And you know, Robbie, it's kind of funny. I tweeted like 4 or 5 live thoughts while I was watching it. I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
Those tweets got a ton of traction. And it just reminds me, like, I think there is a faction of people that really appreciate Age of Ultron like we do. And so,
yeah.
And I don't know. It's just, it's not a perfect film, but I think because of the time it came out and because of the film it had followed, as far as the first Avengers, it got a little bit of a bad rap. And I think the further we get from it, the better it gets almost, because it becomes really foundational. It's also just really fun to see, and I tweeted this, all of my friends be friends. Like the dinner party scene is an all-timer. And I think really clever writing. I feel like Renner, who hasn't been the best character, is really good in this film. Like he's a big jump up. And I think if I had to put my finger on one thing, it's that Thor is so much better. Thor is so much better than he is in the first Avengers as a character, his dialogue, he's funny. Like this is a little bit of like Ragnarok Thor. The gates of hell are filled with the screams of his victims, you know, and the gout. And there's a lot of lines that are really funny. And I think it just, you know, when you talk about like going back to like a film that just represents like the golden age where it's like, I just want to throw a movie on and feel good about myself and not stress tonight. Like, I'm just going to watch this. I'm eating some ice cream, whatever. Uh-huh. It's Age of Ultron because they're all having fun together. They are mostly operating at a high level. They're mostly getting along. I don't know. I just have a soft spot for it. I realize that critically, it's not the best film in the MCU. So that's where I have a critic list. Preference wise, it's such an easy watch. It would be like a top 5 to 8 easy watches for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Spader. That, and Spader is so good.
Yeah, and Spader. Yeah. No, that's easily one of my more rewatchable ones. And I think it will only become more so. Like, whenever we were first doing the rewatch, we talked about what you just brought up. Like, Age of Ultron. And we've talked about this kind of since. I think it's one of the interesting things is when you have these ongoing stories told sequentially like this, you know, you look at the Avengers franchise specifically, and people would say it started out high, had like a dip for Age of Ultron, and then Infinity War and Endgame were both fantastic. And I think that they would say that because Avengers was sort of groundbreaking in the way that it brought these leads together. And then Infinity War was groundbreaking in the way it really focused on the villain and ended in a defeat. And then obviously Endgame did a lot of things really well and kind of finish the whole story. And Age of Ultron, people look at it and it's like, well, it just kind of is Avengers done again with like a different villain.
I get that critique, but...
Well, but I think that the interesting thing there is, like I've said, if you went from Avengers to Infinity War.
Yep. Yeah.
Or even to Civil War.
Which is kind of an Avengers film. Yep.
Yeah. You wouldn't have like that exactly what you're talking about. That like, oh, this was the golden age. Like this is what people are always remembering as like the Avengers.
They have a base. They work well together. They have all the tech and all the money they could ever need. They literally fly a jet back to home base and have parties when they're done. Like,
mm-hmm. And that's such a big part of the Avengers comics. You know, it's like they live in the mansion together in the comics, or they live in Avengers Tower in the 2000s. You have a lot of those kind of slice of life scenes that you never get in the first film because they're just basically coming together in time to fight Loki. And then for obvious reasons, you don't get in Infinity War. And that's part of one of the reasons I love Endgame is you get kind of callbacks to that just when they're trying to figure out the plan for getting the stones back. Mm-hmm. When you have them at least for, you know, like Natasha and Bruce and Tony, like brainstorming. And all of that, I think, is sort of hearkening back to this era. Like that's when all the relationships are formed. And so I think there's this inherent kind of interesting contradiction there. This is not me just defending Age of Ultron so much as just asking if Age of Ultron were a movie like Infinity War, which we love, where it just kind of came in and tore everything up, mm-hmm. then where, you know, we would be missing like a really key piece. So in order to make Infinity War work the way it does, we have to have a movie that more or less maintains the status quo, even if people think that makes it somehow creatively less bold. And I don't know. I mean, I think that sort of it creates an unfair situation for certain creators in these sorts of franchises.
Not to mention when you watch it nowadays, the birth of Vision scene is so cool. Wanda's in this movie. So like when Vision flies down and picks Wanda up and saves her, like now that has so much weight to me. And at the time I was like, oh, cool. But like there's like seven different set pieces that are just so fun to watch. I mean, the fight in South Korea is really cool. The dinner scene or like the party scene and the way that gets broken up and that dialogue and the hammer jokes, right? But then like to bring that back when Vision's born and it's so tense and Vision hands him the hammer and they're like, oh my gosh, okay, something's right there. And then the way Wanda like meets Vision for the first time and what that's going to mean. And I really like it. I really like it. You know, one last thing. If you think about Captain America Civil War as an Avengers film, we are just so lucky that those five films turned out the way they did. Like there is so many alternate realities where some of those Avengers films were mishandled or flops. I mean, we basically went 5 for 5 if you count that film as an Avengers film. Yeah, there's other ups and downs, peaks and valleys in the films, but also in the movies themselves. Mm-hmm. But like for the most part, those five movies are like life-changingly good. And it could have not been that way. I was talking to a friend today, that same friend talking about She-Hulk, and I was talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I basically said like, here's the deal. There's like 12 movies that I think are like life-changing, like 15 years from now, you'll still look back at as like cinema-changing, like defining our era. Incredible films, you know, that's a lot. And then there's like 15 more that are just good films. Like you're not going to write home about them 20 years from now. I don't think it's going to be a big thing. Like Doctor Strange is not going to be remembered that much in 20 years, but it's a really good film. And just, you don't leave not enjoying yourself. It's just, it's fun, you know? And there's only about, I would say, I don't know the exact number, 6 projects where I'm like, it's not great. I still like it, but it's not a great thing. But that's how lucky we are that all five, maybe with the exception of Ultron, I get it, of those movies fall in that first category that like at minimum, you're going to look back and be like, those five Avengers movies are so good. Even if you just watched those five and that's all you watched.
Yeah.
It's still so good.
It's the same thing that I think every time I watch Far From Home, which is, man, if this is the worst movie
for Spider-Man
in this franchise.
Yeah.
We're doing pretty well.
We're doing really well. That's how I feel too. Yep. Like, this is the one that's going to get knocked on by people. What? It's awesome.
Right.
Okay. Anyways, that's my Age of Ultron spinoff. As an update to last week, I had two trivia questions from Iron Man 3. What is Tony Stark's home address? The answer is 10880 Malibu Point, 90265. Quite a few people got that right. So either they're cheating or they have an incredible memory for details. And then I asked people to finish Captain America's famous speech from Winter Soldier, to which a lot of people did. I'm not going to read the whole thing again, but can you finish the last line I was looking for right now?
Because I mean, it's the speech. It ends with him saying, like, if I'm the only one, so be it. But I'm willing to bet I'm not.
Yeah,
right?
Correct. Yeah. It's longer than that. But yeah, a lot of people got that right, too. And then
did you?
Yeah.
Did you have that beforehand?
Exactly. No. Did you write that down? That's what he says, I think. Yep. That's what I was going to bring up.
Off the top of your head.
All right. So trivia for this week, a short quickie. It's just Age of Ultron. And I think I thought of another unique way to go about this. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go.
Unique New York.
Unique New York. Trivia. Avengers, Age of Ultron. What is the first line Nick Fury has in the entire movie?
Oh, I know that.
There you go. That's winner of this question, the first person to message me will get a shirt, although, you know, I've been promising that. I didn't realize I'd be giving out like two shirts a week, and so maybe at some point I'm going to run out here, but I'm having fun doing the trivia, and I'm really excited to mail more shirts. So a quick reminder here from your friends at EpicHeroShop.com that we are partnering with them for our Epic Heroween costume contest. So don't forget that you can still submit your most epic MCU-inspired Halloween costumes for a chance to win a Friends from Work Plus year-long membership for free and an Epic Hero Shop shirt of your choice. So the rules are pretty simple. To enter, you must follow at the FFW podcast and at Epic Hero Shop on Instagram or Twitter, and then post a photo in your favorite superhero Halloween costume using the hashtag Epic Heroween. And so again, stay tuned to at the FFW podcast and at Epic Hero Shop for more updates and maybe a picture of a costume or two from Robbie and I. We'll see you at Epic Heroween.
There are probably two groups of people here that I wanted to address quickly. There are probably some Friends from Work fans that are wondering why we're getting to speak with Matthew Berry. And probably even more so, there are some Matthew Berry fans listening, wondering why they're listening to Friends from Work, a podcast about the MCU. And longtime listeners of the podcast will know that Matt was actually one of our first guests ever on the show.
Years ago.
Back in November of 2019. And I didn't get the chance to talk with him because I was living abroad at the time, like we've discussed. And so I just got to kind of listen afterwards, like everyone else, to the conversation he and Kyle had. But I was very much engrossed. If you haven't heard that episode, it's still up. Mm-hmm. You can go back and find it. But Matthew Berry is here for, you know, a host of reasons. But first and foremost, because he has actually been in a Marvel Studios film, and not just any Marvel Studios film, but in Avengers Endgame.
That's right.
May I ask you where you're going?
The lunch and then Asgard. I'm sorry, you are?
Alexander Pierce. He's the man above the folks behind Nick Fury.
Oh.
My friends call me Mr. Secretary. I'm going to have to ask you to turn that prisoner over to me.
Loki will be answering to Odin himself.
No, he's going to answer to us. Odin can have what's left. And I'm going to need that case. That's been S.H.I.E.L.D. property for over 70 years.
Hand over the case, Stark.
All right, move it, Stuart Little. Things are getting dicey out here. Let's go.
I'm not going to argue who's got the higher authority here. I'm just...
You promise me you won't die? Speak.
We're only giving me a mild cardiac dysrhythmia.
That doesn't sound mild.
I need the case.
I know you got a lot of pull. I'm just saying, jurisdiction.
Okay, then give me the case.
Well, jurisdiction. Yeah.
Hand it over. All right.
Kyle had a blast talking to him about that experience back then, and we wanted the chance to kind of talk to him now about how he looks back on that, but also his thoughts on how the MCU has moved beyond that.
So, Matthew, that's perfect. First of all, welcome to Friends from Work. We're excited to have you back.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. It's the easiest way to get me to appear anywhere is to say, hey, we want to talk to you about the MCU, of which I am a member. That's the craziest thing. Is I am legitimately, I'm in the MCU. I am canon. I have my own page on the Marvel Wiki. Like I am, you know, listen, I'm in the cast, you know, it's Let's crazy, go. You know, you know, it's part of my Twitter bio, you know, God bless. I'm part of the MCU.
Well, and that's one of my favorite things about you, Matthew, is you have accomplished so much in your own career and you have this entirely strong fantasy football presence. And yet whenever I see you, I feel like you look back at that so fondly, like you hold that up like a proud dad that you were in that movie. And I love it so much. So how do you remember those times?
Well, I mean, first off, I mean, it's so funny, like people are like, oh, is that a bucket list moment for you? I'm like, no, it's not a bucket list moment. When you're making your bucket list, like it's stuff like, you know, I want to climb a mountain. Mm-hmm. Like it's stuff that you can accomplish. Like who's like, you know what? I'd like to be in a Marvel movie. I'd like to be in the highest grossing movie of all time worldwide. Yeah. Like you can't, you know, it's not something you can wish. It's not something that can actually happen in theory. So I'm incredibly proud. Just in general, like it's cool. I mean, there's so many levels to it, right? It's cool to be in a movie, period, sure. Full stop. It's cool to be in an MCU movie, full stop. It's cool to be in a movie that you're a massive fan of which I am. I'm a massive fan of the MCU. It's probably the film series that I enjoy the most. So, I mean, it's cool just generally. And then it's super cool specifically to me and my interests. And then when you think about like, you know, listen, I'd have been like, you know, I'd have been happy to be a, you know, whatever, like a, you know, a traffic cop, whatever, a traffic guard in the back of in the back of a scene in like Eternals. But, you know, the fact that I'm in a, you know, on a pivotal scene in Endgame,
right,
you know, with Robert Downey Jr., like I'm in a scene with Tony Stark in Stark Tower, you know, I mean, like. That's just, you know, it's sort of mind blowing. And to answer what I remember every single detail. It is my favorite non-wife, non-kid memory of my life.
I think that's fair. I mean, you said it best. Not only a movie, not only an MCU film, not only Endgame, but a scene with those people, Robert Redford, Chris Hemsworth, Tom Hiddleston. So, I mean, are you hanging out with them? Do you stay in touch with them? What's that like?
So, you know what? Yes and no. You know, a little bit with Downey. I played in the fantasy league with Hemsworth. So know him a little bit via that. I would be lying if I said we were best buds and that we're texting all the time. But I will tell you that there are I will say I do text because he's a big fantasy football player. I do text with Paul Rudd.
Though
Paul Rudd, Ant-Man was not at the filming of that because his stuff was done later in post, Ant-Man is in that scene. So to answer the question, like, who do I keep in touch with from that scene? I suppose Ant-Man, and I'm still, you know, obviously I'm in a fantasy league right now with Joe Russo. You know, I'm close with the Russo brothers, especially Joe. And there are a number of people in the Avengers movies that are hardcore fantasy football players. And so I have various relationships with them, and that's been really cool. And it's, by the way, it's how I got into that movie is because Joe Russo's in like four different fantasy leagues and has read my column for years. And it turns out he was a fan and we had a mutual friend, and I'm obviously a massive fan of him and Anthony and everything they've done. And, you know, we got connected and we started emailing and texting, and then we grabbed dinner and then we grabbed another dinner, and, you know, we just sort of, we played in a fantasy league together. We're just sort of, our friendship developed, and, you know, he means a great deal to me. He's a very, very good friend and a special person.
Well, and years ago when we chatted, you talked about how just unbelievably welcoming and gracious both Joe, but also Robert Downey Jr. were. Can you tell that story again for people that missed it? Just how you felt when you got on set, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I was super nervous, right? Cause you just don't know. I mean, they, you know, I'm talking with Joe, and Joe says, hey, you want to come do the movie? And I'm like, yeah, let me check my schedule. Right. I mean, like, it's just an insane question. But he's like, I got this part that I think you'd be good for. And I'm like, okay, great. And it hasn't hit me as real. Like, I'm sure he's just sort of BSing and maybe he'll forget. Like, there'll be a million things that I say in the moment that I mean, that I genuinely mean in the moment. And then whatever, life and work and kids and demands. And 2 weeks later, you've just forgotten that you said it. Not out of any sort of malice, but just because there's only so many hours in the day. And
sure.
So I thought maybe like he's directing $1 billion back-to-back because they filmed Infinity War and Endgame back-to-back. And, it's a cast of thousands, literally a cast of thousands. And it's not just dealing with pretty much every movie star in Hollywood, but you're dealing with their agents and their publicists and their lawyers and and studio executives and it's literally the budget on that is like $1 billion. So he's got a lot going on. And so I was just like, he'll probably forget. But sure enough, 2 weeks later, I get a call. Hey, Matthew, this is Chris Castaldi, first AD on the Avengers. I understand you're joining us. Okay. Yeah. great. So they make the arrangements for me to come join them and do the movie. And, I'm super nervous. And they don't tell me anything, right? They just, all Castaldi tells me is he says, you're in a scene with Hemsworth and Downey. Hmm. That's it. Doesn't tell me what my role is. Doesn't tell me anything about the movie. Just literally that.
Wow.
And you're going to come film it this week. And it turns out that week was the week that it was the week after Thor Ragnarok had opened. Just to give you an idea of how in advance shoot these things. And so Ragnarok had just opened that week and I had just seen it that weekend. And then the following week, I'm flying down to Atlanta to do my scene. It was a 2-day shoot. And so anyway, you get there and they measure you for wardrobe and everything like that. I'd already sent in my measurements, but they give me my wardrobe and it's a suit. And then they hand me a shield badge. And I'm like, I guess it must be shield, right? But they hadn't told me anything like this. It's just I can't imagine what an actor without knowledge of the MCU would be thinking in that scenario. But I figured that part out. And then you sign all these different NDAs. Before I even seen a script, I'm signing a million different NDAs and just all the penalties that I'll be under if I reveal anything.
Death, probably.
How much Disney can sue me for. I have to name my first kid Walt if I have to, if I give up any of these secrets. So after I sign all that, they tell me I'm shielded. And they give me 2 pages of the script. That's it. And I have no idea what any of this means, right? I mean, just again, the last thing I saw was Ragnarok. Uh-huh. I haven't seen Infinity War. I haven't seen Ant-Man and the Wasp. I haven't seen, obviously, I haven't seen Endgame. So there's all this knowledge that hasn't happened yet.
The timing of that is so insane, right? Because now, I mean, if you had seen Infinity War, you probably right away are guessing, okay, time travel or something like that. But this, you don't even know that they're going to lose. So like, what?
Right. I know nothing. I don't think I even know that the name of the movie is called Infinity War or Endgame. I just know Avengers 3 and 4. And I know that the next movie that's coming out is Avengers 3, and then there's going to be Ant-Man and the Wasp, and then there's going to be Endgame. But that's all. I joined pretty late in the shoot. Like they were already editing Infinity War when I got there. Not that I seen it or knew anything about it. So I see these pages and it's like, and just none of it makes sense. And it's A1 Tony. There's lines in there that say A1 Tony and Tony. And I'm like, what's A1 Tony? Huh. And it's Avengers 1
Tony. Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Like I find out later that that's what it stands for. But I'm reading the script and it's like Tony and A1 Tony. And I'm like, okay, is that right. AI? Do they mean AI, not A1 Tony? Is there some sort of weird, robot thing that Tony's invented or something? And anyway, so I get to the set and it's Stark Tower and I look around and I'm like, oh, holy, like I immediately geek out because it's Stark Tower. And then Anthony Russo sees me and motions me over. Anthony's directing this scene. I say hi to Joey's off to the side, but Anthony's the one. And so I come to the center of the stage and I'm freaking out. And I notice as I'm walking up, it's like this huge room, right? I'm walking in and Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Hemsworth are already in the middle along with a bunch of extras, all these guys dressed as SHIELD agents. And I notice as I walk up, I notice Tony's wearing the T-shirt from Avengers 1.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he's wearing he's wearing the exact outfit that he wore in Avengers
Black
1.
Black Sabbath, is that the shirt?
And I'm sorry, yeah.
Black Sabbath.
Yeah, Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
It's a rock T-shirt. It's a black T-shirt. It's Black Sabbath. It's a T-shirt, and he's got sleeves. It's a T-shirt with a long T-shirt underneath. He's got the sleeves. and more importantly, and Hemsworth has the long hair. He's got the Avengers One outfit from Thor, and he's got the long hair. What I really notice is the long hair, because I've just seen Ragnarok, right? Where he's got the short hair. Yeah, so you're okay. Clearly this is some sort of flashback scene or time travel scene. So as I'm taking this all in and I'm freaking out, and I don't, here's how Hollywood works. This is a massive movie, right? It's Disney is pouring $1 billion into the filming of these two movies, and they're expecting, you know, theme parks and shows and you know, to help launch Disney Plus and you know, merchandise, and you know, massive amount of money is riding on this movie. It's a lot of it is on the shoulders of Robert Downey Jr. And so if Robert Downey Jr. had just, you know, said, "Hi, nice to meet you," and then, you know, during a commercial break, during a break in the action, mm-hmm. had like pulled us, you know, the assistant director aside and said, like, "Hey, this guy. Is Avengers Endgame. You think, could we do better than the fantasy guy for this scene? Like, are we sure he's the best option?" Even if he just said something like that, just a very, you know, non-threatening question, I'd have been gone. I'm like, "Oh, that must mean Downey doesn't like him." And so I was super nervous. And, you know, Robert Downey Jr. was like, "It's so nice to meet you. Thanks." He's like, "Thanks so much for doing this."
"Thank you."
"Wait a minute. I'm sorry, RDJ. Did you just thank me for doing this? Like, what?" Like, you know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and Hemsworth is incredibly kind as well. Everyone's super nice and welcoming. And I think that, like, the Avengers set, like any work environment, it all starts from the top, right? Mm-hmm. And so the Russo brothers and Robert Downey Jr. are all incredibly kind, gracious, generous men. They are wonderful people. They care about everyone. They know everyone's names. They're, you know, like, they are, I can't say enough good things about them. You run out of adjectives. Mm. And when the three people at the top of the food chain, as it were, are so kind and gracious and welcoming, it's hard for anyone else to be a jerk. I remember one time I asked Downey that story. I told him that, like, the second day. And I said, "Hey man, this is so, you're so incredibly kind. You're so incredibly kind." And he told me, he said, you know, I said, "You're so welcoming. I can't believe how incredibly gracious you are. Thank you so much." And he goes, when I got out of jail, the first movie I did after I got out of jail, and I had, you know, that whole period of my life, he goes, "I got on the set and some of the people were looking at me weird, you know, and I felt real uncomfortable and people were looking at me weird. And, you know, I kind of got some evil eye stares and, like, you know, really, we're doing a movie with this guy. And, you know, I thought Hollywood had written him off and everything like that." And I'm paraphrasing here. It's, you know, a number of years ago that I had this conversation with him, but he just said, "I swore at that moment that I would never, ever make somebody feel unwelcome on a movie set because I felt so uncomfortable."
Wow. That is so good to hear.
Right? And I can tell you, just from my experience and from the experience of everyone else that I talked to on that movie set, he is very true to his word. Many of the people on that crew I'd meet people like, "Oh, I've been with him since Iron Man 1. Yeah, I joined at Iron Man 2. You know, I've been here since Civil War, you know, whatever." But, like, for the most part, many of the people there had been there since Iron Man 1, the same crew, the same assistant director, the same makeup, the same hair, the same camera operators, the same boom people, like really a family. And to a person, they would all just, like, just randomly be like, "Isn't Robert great? Isn't he awesome? Isn't he amazing?" Like, it was just so, so because he made me feel so welcome and that I wasn't going to get, you know, booted off, that people were going to be like, "Wait a minute, we have the fantasy football guy. Let's get him out of here." Once I sort of knew, like, they weren't getting rid of me, I relaxed. I was able to do my good work. And we started ad-libbing some stuff. We break for lunch the very first day. It's a two-day shoot. And I'm at this, I'm taken to this private area where, I'm looking around for a craft service table. And somebody sidles up to me and says, "Hey, Matthew." And I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "If you would like, you're welcome to join Mr. Downey for lunch."
Stop.
Free. And so I'm taken back to this area where it's Downey, his producing partner, Chris Hemsworth, his producing partner, Robert Redford, the Russo brothers, Tom Hiddleston. I think Hemsworth's wife was there as well. And we're all having lunch, and I walk in And Downey does, you know, one of these classic Downey things. He's like, he looks at me and he's like, hey, goes, you ever done anything like this before? And I'm like, wow, Robert, I've sort of played myself in sitcoms a couple times before, some cameo stuff, but nothing like this. And he goes, don't take this the wrong way, but you look exactly like a SHIELD agent. And I'm like, no, Robert, seriously, from you, that is a massive compliment. And he goes, no, I'm messing with you. He goes, I'm messing with you. And then he turns to the Russo brothers. He turns to the Russo brothers and he goes, he's doing very well. We should give him more stuff. Hmm. And the Russo brothers are like, absolutely. Wow. And so they ended up, I was supposed to, I think, to do one line in the movie. And it wound up being, yeah, and it wound up being six. And I'm doing a lot more action in the movie than I expected to. Like, I wasn't originally supposed to be involved in the struggle for the briefcase that held the Tesseract. I wasn't supposed to be on my knees looking over Tony. Like, there was a lot. I was supposed to sort of like walk in with Redford and sort of then leave. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm like in the mix in that sort of scene. And I wound up doing six lines. Four made the final cut. I'm only on camera for one of them. So you have to watch it sort of like with closed caption. Mm-hmm. But if you watch with closed caption, you'll see like I have four lines in the movie, which is crazy. And, you know, it was just amazing. And yeah, it was crazy. The last thing I'll say here, just and then I'll shut up. But when I walked in, and so before I walk in and just Hemsworth and Downey are there, along with Anthony Russo and the camera crew, you know, it's all set up to shoot. And there's all these extras. And it is then when I'm there. It is not until I'm there. We're really like, okay, places, people, we're going to try one. Redford walks in.
Jeez.
You know, dressed as Alexander Pierce. And I'm like, holy crap, that's Alexander Pierce. And, you know, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to be in scene with, you know, and then I start realizing like, okay, wait a minute. It's the old Sesame Street song. Like, one of these things is not like the other. One of these things doesn't belong. Downey, Hemsworth, Robert freaking Redford. And dumbass me. But there's a frame of the movie. Man. There's a frame of the movie. If you go to my Twitter, and you'll see like there's like a couple of frames of the movie where the entire movie is just us four people.
I love it so much.
Right. And so my mind is blown. Redford couldn't be more gracious either. And he was like the big, big secret. They were like, no one, you know, we cannot, because they felt like, given the events of Winter Soldier, that if anyone knew Alexander Pierce was in this movie,
sure,
it probably gives it away that it's because it's hard to do a flashback given that movie, right? You're pretty sure, okay, it's time travel, because by the time that, you know, and if people knew that Redford was in, once Infinity War came out, if you knew Redford or Alexander Pierce, if you knew he was in, that character was in Endgame, you'd realize, oh, it's time travel.
Sure.
Right.
I'm only like 80% jealous.
Did you know, based on the pages you were given, whether you were supposed to be a Hydra agent undercover as a SHIELD agent, or were you supposed to be a SHIELD agent that was just sort of like the unknowing patsy of Pierce?
I did not know from the pages that I was given, although I've done interviews with Joe Russo. Like, we had Joe on my podcast once I could talk about it once it came out. And we asked him that direct question. And he just said, well, given how close you were to Redford, that you were basically Redford's right-hand man,
you're
probably Hydra. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I like to think, Joe, if I may, that I was Hydra for a while, but then I had a nebula, conscious, you know, moment of consciousness where I then ultimately turned to good. But for what it's worth, Joe's pretty sure my character is dead, and that my character died in the events of Winter Soldier.
No, oh, totally, man. Redeemed. Well, the character got totally redeemed.
I did. You can look it up on YouTube. I did a couple of different things. If you look up like Matthew Berry Avengers, Avengers Endgame on YouTube, it's out there somewhere. But we did a scene. I did a couple of fun like behind the scenes shoots with those guys. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones I did is I went one with and I won't blow the ending joke. But I did a little joke with Joe and Anthony where they're editing the film or they're looking at dailies, and I come up to them like, hey guys, like just want to talk about my character and, you know, sort of the arc and what are we thinking for S.H.I.E.L.D. agent? Like after this, like standalone movie, like maybe a Netflix series, like yeah, where are we going off. With this? Like what's his backstory? You know, was he raised by strict parents? So he always loves, you know, always loved Law and Order or, you know, rebellious teens. Like, you know, is he drawn to the dark side of Hydra? Like anyway, and they're just ignoring me the whole time. And, you know, I'm just like, that's you know, funny. So,
that's funny.
So yes, my take on the character is probably different, that, you know. But yes, I think I think most likely yes that I was high. If I'm that close to the Pierce, I'm probably mm-hmm. Hydra, and I'm probably dead. For whatever it's worth, one of my fantasy football team names is Hail Hydra.
Oh, okay. There okay. You go. Wow. Yeah.
That spills the beans.
In answering that, you touched a bit on my second question, which is just you know you clearly have become friends with the Russos and were even before filming. And I think I recall you saying that you had maybe even spent time on set with them and other projects, though, you know, you weren't a part of them. Can you give our, you know, a lot of our listeners are unsurprisingly huge fans of what the Russo brothers specifically have done in the MCU. And I didn't know if just, you know, having spent some time with them and then of course being directed by Anthony in that scene, can you kind of give just a little bit of insight into what their process looks like?
Yeah, I mean, so to be clear, the only time I've been on set with them, I've spent some time with them, but the only time I've been on set with them is those 2 days that I spent on Endgame. Okay. But I've definitely spent a decent amount of time talking with them. I when I was on set, I met Marcus and McFeely, who are, you know, the writers of Endgame, and
we're their biggest fans.
They're fantastic. Yeah, yeah. They're really great. They're both really lovely people as well. And so I talked to them somewhat about process. And, you know, they, in terms of they're really, you know, this just goes to sort of how they are as people. They're really collaborative, right? They'll, the four of them, it's really the four of them. The four mm-hmm. of them will, you know, and ultimately Joe and Anthony have final say, of course, but the four of them will go. And I remember him telling me once that, like, it was just so crazy because they're like, and I was talking with Marcus McFeely about this as well. They're so crazy. They're like, okay, you guys are doing Infinity War and Endgame. Go. You know what I mean? Like, and so it's sort of, they kind of know where they need to get to, you know, where they need mm-hmm. to, where they're, sure. where the ball's being handed off to them and then where they need to get to. And then the rest, they can sort of like have some fun. And obviously they use the comic books as inspiration as well. But, you know, it's so funny. You know, they were telling me, it's just like, it's just one of those crazy things where you're just sort of like, all right, who in the MCU do we want? You know, whether it's a comic book character or just from uh-huh. previous films, or like, if we want, do we want Darcy's boyfriend from the second Thor? We can have him. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, wait, right? You know, like the intern of the intern, right? And Thor
Dark
World.
Sure. Oh, yeah. yeah Thank yeah. you for making a Thor Dark World reference on this podcast. You don't even know what you just did, but I love it. Keep going.
All right. But they literally made that reference. They were like, you know, that's, it's like, you can just, it's literally whoever you want. Like, sure. just like, you can bring, you know, and have so much fun with that. And so, and so it's just this really open canvas. And so they just sort of like throw stuff out. They try stuff. They'll shoot scenes. They'll realize it doesn't work. They'll write scenes. They'll go back and forth. And when you're on set, they'll also like, so we did on set, I'll give you a small example that makes me look good. But that also I think speaks to them. So we do the scene, right? And so I just told you, like, it was a 2-day shoot, and they gave me more stuff to do in that scene because they liked how I was, and, you know, Robert liked me and the Russos liked me and everything like that. Anyway, so now we're doing the whole scene. We've done the whole scene. And so we do it as scripted. We did it like 3 or 4 times as scripted. And sure. most directors mm-hmm. would say, like, okay, good, let's move on. And Joe and Anthony are like, all right, hey, let's just play with it. Let's have some fun. And we played it 3 or 4 more times.
Wow.
Just, you know, ad-libbing, feeling, you know, like, hey, we've got it in the can, so now let's just have some fun. And so one thing that I did that I ad-libbed, and at this point I'm feeling pretty comfortable, again, this speaks to how gracious Robert and the Russo brothers are. But, you know, I felt comfortable enough to sort of ad-lib a little bit. And so we're down there, and at one point, you know, whatever, Ant-Man pulls the defibrillator and whatever uh-huh. creates the heart arrhythmia, and Tony Stark is down to the ground, and we're all like, and I'm like yelling like, Stark, come on, give him some air, Stark, come on. And I literally during this is during one of the ad-lib periods, I turn to Thor and I go, isn't your hammer like magic or something? Hit him. And wow. And so he does. He hits him, and we all laughed. And then Joe goes, all right, you know, we probably won't use that, but let's do that again and just remember Thor, that, you know, sparks are coming out. You know, after you hit him, sparks will come out or something like that. So just react. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. So now we do it again. And once again, I do that, you know, ad lib. Like, Thor, like, isn't your, like, hammer magic or something? Like, hit him with your hammer. Something like that. Like, don't you have a magic hammer? Uh-huh. Hit him. And so he does it, and, you know, sparks, and then, you know, Tony comes awake. And obviously that moment, they cut my line out, which, by the way, was the right call, and I'll explain why in a second. But, like, that moment stayed. That moment, you know, that mm-hmm. moment stayed of him that was never scripted, of Thor hitting Tony with a hammer to bring him back to life.
I can't believe that worked.
And it's just because – because of the atmosphere they created, because of the comfort I felt of saying that line. And then obviously, of course, you know, Robert and Chris acting it perfectly and having mm-hmm. fun with it was just the right amount of funny and dramatic. And the reason it's right for them to cut my line of that is that, listen, I'm a SHIELD agent, right? It's a superhero movie. Thor is the superhero. The superhero should have the idea, not the random SHIELD agent. You know what I mean? Sure. So, and you don't need my line, you know, once Thor just, you know, it works, it totally works. And so, you know, they were appreciative. I think it's just really cool that moment got in the movie, that moment that I just sort of made up on the fly got into the movie.
And that does say a lot about the Russos and like you said, the cast members that you got to work with there.
Yeah.
Final question here on the MCU front, Matthew. You know, you got to be in this massive finale of Phase 3 and of the Infinity Saga. So really everything that we had ever seen Marvel Studios do up until that point. So then, you know, right after we spoke in 2019, everything goes on pause for a couple of years for obvious reasons. And then start of 2021, we get WandaVision and then just this kind of massive, you know, deluge of MCU projects, both film and television. And so, you know, kind of given one, how much of a fan you were of the Infinity Saga. And I know on the last episode where you were on, you talked about how you're a big fan from day one with Iron Man. I've been really curious to hear your thoughts on how your fandom has progressed, you know, as we've moved into a really different era of Marvel storytelling with a lot of different protagonists and really approaches to the genre.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of, you know, pick your favorite kid, right? I mean, obviously Endgame is my favorite. My all-time favorite movie is Endgame because I'm in it. If you're like, pick something that you're not in, I would say Winter Soldier is my all-time favorite MCU movie still to this day. Specifically of Phase 4, there's 3 that jump out. I mean, there's so many choices, right? I mean, No Way Home is great. You know, all the Spider-Man stuff is really fantastic. The Tom Holland Spider-Man stuff, specifically. I loved Shang-Chi was fantastic, was really, really well done. Really enjoyed that and how that tied into a bunch of different things, especially if you watch the one shots, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I hated the Mandarin plot of Iron Man 3. I hated the Mandarin plot of Iron Man 3 because I thought that was just too much of a red herring kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like Iron Man 3 is great and the actual villain in Iron Man 3 is great, but I hated the Mandarin, fake Mandarin subplot. Right. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, finally then getting a real Mandarin moment there and, you know, through line and storyline in Shang-Chi was fantastic.
And such a great
one. I loved Hawkeye as well. I thought Hawkeye was really well done. Mm-hmm. Rogers the Musical is so unbelievably amazing, and you can see it on YouTube. Like,
yeah, the whole thing.
I want to talk for 1 second about the brilliance of that before I answer your question, Robbie. But the brilliance of Rogers the Musical is that, from a writing standpoint, it has to be good enough that you think it could be made on Broadway. It has to be good enough that it's actually entertaining.
Right.
But it has to be bad enough. That Hawkeye is going to roll his eyes and that it's cheesy enough and that we get the joke of the fact that it's sort of like the Avengers, but really just kind of this off-Broadway dime store version of what actually happened. It's this awful Broadwayization of what we know actually happened. So it's like this unbelievably crazy, thin, narrow window you have to hit with that. True. And they nail it. They freaking hit it out of the park because it's really catchy. It's really well performed. It's funny, but it's funny in the way that like, oh, this is awful. But it's not so awful that it's awful, awful.
Yeah,
like it's great awful, if that makes any sense at all. It's like, and it all is set to music. Like it is such a phenomenal accomplishment writing wise. Just as a writer myself, I'm in awe of Rogers the Musical. And I thought plotline, I thought the whole story arc was great and really, really wonderful for that character specifically. Having said all that, I would still say WandaVision is my favorite. WandaVision, of all the things in Phase 4, it's the most surprising. It's the most different. I think it's the deepest character dive. I have, you know, I'm in on the MCU like you guys are, like everyone that listens to this is. And I... Before and after, I don't know that I've ever had as much anticipation on a weekly basis as to the WandaVision. Every week was just like, oh, what the hell's going on in Westview? What the hell? Wait, what are we doing? What's going on? You know, like, and like every week it was just like, whoa, you know, and just, and like at first you're like, what the sitcoms, what are they doing? And it just, it's all, I thought WandaVision is true. WandaVision is truly brilliant. Truly, truly brilliant.
Man, I didn't pay him to say that. I didn't pay him a cent.
Especially Kyle's.
We can't get on this tangent because I would go forever, but you're talking to the right people about this. I mean, did you, by the way, did you know they like actually went to a, like an old 50s lighting? They shot in front of a live audience to do the sitcom. Like, I mean, they went all out on it, which I love, but yeah, we can't get in there.
I didn't know they went to the 50s lighting. I do know they shot in front of a live studio audience.
All, like the props are actually on strings like they used to do.
Oh,
like
wow.
Stuff like that. It's really cool. For the 50s episode, I mean. But then like...
Yeah, of course. But
yeah.
Brilliant. The whole thing was brilliant. And,
unbelievable.
And Vision's arc and, you know... And that series contains one of my favorite lines in the MCU in terms of, you know, what is grief but love persevering? That's the exact quote, is what is grief but love persevering? And honestly, like I have... As I've had some death in my family since WandaVision aired... and I've thought about that line quite a bit, and that actually sort of helps me cope with that in a weird way.
I still think that episode 8 is the best thing they've made thus far in this phase, when she's walking through her past with her parents, and then that conversation with Vision you're talking about depression, and it's like a wave washing over. I mean, it gets really heavy, really deep.
Really?
And then, by the way, just a special moment because we hadn't had any content. It was the first Disney Plus show. We had been waiting for like a year for anything to come out. So then, episode 2, when she looks at that beekeeper and then rewinds it. And at the time, we had no idea. I have chills right now. We were like, what the heck was that?
And by the way, that's a great point, because Falcon and Winter Soldier was actually supposed to be the first Disney Plus series, but because of production delays with COVID, it wound up being WandaVision. And I think Disney Plus got such a huge break with that, because, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier is fine, but WandaVision is so special. And I think a lot of people were like, when they announced, oh yeah, Disney, you know, where MCU stuff is going to be on Disney Plus and it's going to be canon. And you're sort of like, oh God, is this going to be bad? Like, is this going to be like, you know, Star Wars Christmas special kind of stuff? And then WandaVision comes out and you're like, oh, not only is this not like sort of the, okay, here's the stuff that isn't good enough for movies that we're just going to throw on our streaming service. Oh, no. This is actually better because it's longer and you can do deeper dives, and it's actually like,
100%.
You know, I mean, there's parts of me that wishes like, do we have to release Wakanda Forever in theaters? Couldn't we just make it 8 episodes?
And
like,
you know what I mean? Like, that's a little,
you know what I mean? Like,
we like the idea of the shows being there to dive into those stories that they can't get into for timing wise, all while building up to the movie. So maybe, and hopefully it puts more focus on the films, that they become these big events. Like in the comics, that's how it was. There's all these side stories leading up to one big event thing. And hopefully that's what the movies then become because of that.
Well, and I think you'll see that it'll be some crossover. And that's been fun, seeing movie stars or movie characters.
Wanda and Doctor Strange, et cetera. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And then back and forth. And like, and now, you know, like they're going to make a Daredevil movie. Like, like the Charlie Cox Daredevil series was fantastic, right?
Absolutely.
On the Netflix series. And now they're making a Daredevil movie, and it's going to be Charlie Cox, as it should be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Matthew, you're a friend from work now. So thanks for being on. We really appreciate everything you're doing. I know that I enjoy your coverage over at NBC, and I know our audience loves everything you're doing on the fantasy football side of things. So we really appreciate it. And you're welcome anytime on Friends from Work.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate you.
Well, we hope you guys enjoyed what Matthew had to say. It's always so fun to hear the behind the scenes. And like we always say, it is so fun to hear about how welcoming and cool and kind and gracious of an environment the Marvel sets seem to be. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe to Friends from Work wherever you get your podcasts. We really appreciate you listening. Check out our website, theffwpodcast.com, and visit Friends from Work Plus. It's our bonus coverage. You can find that on the website or through Apple subscriptions. It's $5 a month for extra content. We love you guys so much. We'll see you soon. We'll be back chatting about She-Hulk and hopefully with a few other cool interviews. We'll see you next time on Friends from Work.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.